Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found Nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
To another sparkling edition of The Thought Police. Now, Matt Kelly is here with me from The New European, the publisher, no less, than The New European. I'm Mike Graham, of course. Now, people have been asking me with bated breath, we can't wait for the next Thought Police podcast episode.
Why?
Because
Why?
We want to see what Matt's going to say about his beloved Labour Party, right? One of them actually said, you know, we might have to kind of talk you down from, you know, some kind of mad window ledge scenario. Because But you've always said, actually, and you said it last week, the one thing you can look forward to, at least, is Jeremy Corbyn no longer being the leader of the Labour Party. Yeah. At least you're going to get that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not my beloved Labour Party, have to say. Not Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party, it isn't.
No, his is not. But you're a Labour man, and you've always voted Labour.
And for the first time,
until this time, right?
In my life, I voted Green this time. The first time in my life, I'm now thinking about joining the Labour Party.
Are you?
Yeah, because I think now is the time for what I think of as traditional Labour supporters to make themselves felt, I think. Yeah. Although I do fear that Corbyn's legacy will be that he's upset the machinery of the Labour Party so much that it's going to be impossible for anything other than...
I think it's going to take two more. It's a bit like the old who's going to be the manager of Manchester United after Sir Alex Ferguson, because you don't want to be the first one, because it's going to be, I think, the second leader of the Labour Party that brings them back. Because I don't see anyone who's lining up at the moment to be the leader who has got a chance in hell of changing anything.
What about Keir Starmer?
I think he's a lightweight. I think he's a lightweight. I mean, he's London, he's metropolitan, he's a lawyer. Yeah. I mean, he's got about as much in common with the people of Sedgefield and you know, Rye Valley, is it? Mm. As I have, you know? Yeah. And so they need, I think, somebody... I think they do need a woman, actually.
Yeah, that's
I think that would change things quite dramatically.
Yeah.
Amazingly, Lisa Nandy's in the frame for it now.
I saw that.
She is, technically speaking... Quite sort of left wing, but she's thought to be centrist because they've gone so far to the left. So people like Lisa Nandy are now kind of, you know, nearly Tories in their eyes. So I can't really see her getting it, to be honest. But it would be great fun if she did, because obviously I had that encounter with her in a tent.
That's right.
Where she completely and utterly refused to admit that there was ever a deal with Theresa May. And I know what she was getting at. She was basically saying it wasn't the deal. The deal would have come after the withdrawal agreement. Yeah. But the point is, it was a deal. Everybody called it a deal. You know, if it walks like a duck and it quacks, it's a duck, you know? And then she said that she wished that she had voted for that. You know, and at one point, I mean, my other half was laughing at it, because at one point she said to me, "You're just being difficult now, aren't you?"
Welcome to the migration.
To which my other half said, "Well, she should try living with you." But, you know, I think definitely, I mean, if it's Angela Rayner, disaster written all over it, because she just hasn't got the brains. And we've seen with Joe Swinson what can happen if you put somebody in charge who hasn't got the brains.
Agreed.
Joe Swinson made a complete pig's ear of that election campaign. You've got, what's her face, Emily Thornberry, who I think nobody really trusts.
Well, also, I don't think she plays very well, to be honest, with ordinary people.
No.
I think they can smell that she's like... She's very
posh. Metropolitan elite.
Yeah.
I mean, the advantage Lisa Nandy has is that she's from Wigan.
She's real.
And she's got parents who are sort of from there, and I think they owned a shop and all this kind of thing. Yeah.
And then Rebecca Long Bailey.
Rebecca Long Bailey, I think, is better than people think she is. You
I'm
know?
Sure that's true.
I did an interview with her, actually, a couple of weeks ago, just before the election. Well, last week, actually. And she struck me as she had a sense of humour, which I think helps, which Corbyn didn't have. Because my final question to her was, what have you done with Emily Thornberry? She just burst out laughing, you know. So you'd like to see us as somebody with a sense of humour. And actually, I think she's come on quite a bit. I think she's partially John McDonald's creature, though, is the only thing that worries me slightly. Right. And he'll be sort of pulling the strings, you know?
Yeah.
And I may be doing her a disservice.
I do rate her very highly, but I think the thing that she's got going against her, and this will sound completely facetious and nonsensical, is that she's got the most irritating voice I've ever heard.
She's got quite an irritating face, actually. Yeah. She's probably now putting you in a good place, because what I've said is much worse than what you just said. But she has got a very small mouth.
You're right. Okay.
I'm sorry, these things are important. No. People look at faces.
No need to apologise.
People look at faces and they decide whether to trust them or not. Yeah, you know, people look at Boris and just see kind of a happy guy. And I think that's part of his charm.
Yeah.
But they look at Corbyn and see this kind of miserable old git.
Nasty grandpa.
Right, nasty grandpa. Yeah, not in a good way. And I mean, it's just...
Is there a good nasty grandpa?
Well, wasn't there a movie? Or was it Dirty Grandpa?
Dirty Grandpa. Where it was Robert De Niro.
Where he was just this filthy old man. Which apparently you could get away with a few years ago. I don't know if you can do it now.
Well, definitely if you're Robert De Niro.
Well, of course,
But Jeremy Corbyn, not so much.
Yeah, not so much, yeah. Even though he's been married three times. But nobody mentions that. No, but I mean, I just think that... But they're such a toxic party, you know. People have been passing around things on social media in the last few days... Where you know, they've talked about, you know, these are like momentum types talking about how, you know, they think Israel was somehow involved in screwing the election.
They've been saying that for a while. Incredible, just bizarre.
What's wrong with these people, right? You know, they had a shitty leader.
Yeah.
They had a shitty policy on Brexit, and they had a bloody awful, ridiculous, out of touch kind of idea of giving all sorts of crap away to people, and nobody was buying it.
But they sort of got swept away by. I mean, and this is pure thickness to me. And by the way, this is. What riles me about the Labour Party more than anything, Corbyn's Labour Party. It's not the anti-Semitism stuff, disgusting as that is.
Yeah.
It's not the prevarication over and the vacillation on Brexit, stupid as that was. Mm. But it was their sheer organisational incompetence. Mm. You know, they were just a crap organisation. Yeah. And they let things completely take them over. They let the agenda get swept away from them.
Yeah.
And they spent 2 years defending themselves from anti-Semitism when... A smart person...
And yet doing nothing about it.
And doing nothing about it. But a smart person would have come out and said, when Andrew Neil said, are you going to apologise?
Yeah.
He would have said, not only am I going to apologise on behalf of the Labour Party, I'm going to apologise on behalf of myself.
Yes.
Because I've looked back and I can see why people think that what they think.
Yeah.
But it's not me and blah, 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 blah. And if he'd have looked the camera in straight down the barrel of the camera and said something that smacked of sincerity, I think a lot of people would have gone, okay, fair enough.
But he would have also,
he never did.
No, but I think he would have also had to draw a line under it in some way by saying, look, here's what we've done. Because I've put this question again, I think I put it to Rebecca Longbody. She said, well, you know, we've put all these processes in place now so that it won't happen. And I said, well, has anybody been expelled from the party since you've put those processes in place? Oh, I'm not familiar with the... you know, that's not an answer.
It's like they don't take it seriously.
No, of course they don't take it seriously. And the suspicion from a lot of people's perspective is that they're courting the Muslim vote.
Yeah.
And the reason that they're anti-Semitic is because it suits them courting the Muslim vote. I'm not suggesting for a minute that all Muslims are anti-Semitic, but they're not. But the point is that the Muslim vote is a lot bigger than the Jewish vote.
Right.
It's a simple matter of numbers. Now, and we know that an awful lot of inner-city constituencies... are quite Muslim heavy, if you like, and that's where they're playing to the gallery. But I mean, I don't know if that's true, but if it is true, it's pretty despicable.
But if it's true, it would fit a pattern that I saw of them going from a party of like complete principle, you know, where this is what we think and here's why, and if you don't like it, you can lump it, to a party that suddenly started playing the numbers. And you could see that happening over Brexit as well. Is how do we get over this dichotomy of having loads of Leave MPs but loads of Remain members, you know, and you can see them sort of playing that game, and that's, you know, I don't mind that in the Tory party, you expect that from the Tories, but not from Labour. You expect them to be principled, and
well, they should have had a proper position on Brexit,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
even if it was to have a second referendum and that's it,
yeah,
rather than, you know,
they eventually came round to,
the damage had been done by that, and also they still couldn't bring themselves to say whether they wanted to stay in or not,
yeah. And Corbyn was going to be...
Because again, I asked every single one of them when I had them on, you know, one, what's Jeremy's position? What's his individual position?
Yeah.
Oh, well, Jeremy supports Labour Party policy. No. Yeah. What does he want to do? Does he want to leave? Does he want to stay? Right. What about McDonald? Do you want us to leave or stay? Yeah. I want the best deal for this country.
Yeah.
Well, what's that? Well, it might be the deal that we get from Brussels, or it might be the deal we've already got, or it might be, you know, it's a ridiculous situation. It's just absolute cobblers. And they tried... As soon as the writing was on the wall and they knew they'd lost, suddenly the election, which hadn't been about Brexit, was now all about Brexit, and that's why they lost. And then they blamed the media for all these terrible attacks on Jeremy Corbyn, and nobody ever gets attacked like he does in the press. Absolute cobblers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some of the stuff was written about Boris Johnson. And Max Hastings wrote a piece saying he couldn't be trusted, and that was why he fired him.
Yeah.
You know, Peter Oborne wrote a series of articles about, you know, why Boris Johnson was dangerous for this country.
Yeah.
I mean, forget about all the tossers who were the planks of, as I called them. I don't know if you saw my list of a top 100 planks
of
the year.
No, I didn't. Did I feature?
It's gone. No, you didn't. You weren't in it, no. Oh. But I'll tell you what, it's gone absolutely.
What do I have to do?
It's gone mad, right? Because I started it. I was kind of, you know, a bit of a loose end on, I think it was Saturday night.
Yeah.
And I thought, I know, I'll do. Because I did one of the, you know, top virtue signalers. It went quite well.
Yeah.
So I just put this list out of the top 10 planks of the year.
Top 10?
Right? Top 10.
Oh, right. Okay. I thought you said 100.
Yeah, well, it became 100 because I put 10 out and people went, oh, you left off so-and-so. Always Gary Lineker, you know. And I went, oh, I'll do another 10. So I just kept doing another 10.
So who was number one?
Number one, Prince Andrew.
Yes.
I think you can't argue with that. You know, there's quite a lot of Labour politicians. I mean, some people would look at it and say, you may think that I'm a bit of a right-winger because there's not that many Tories. The only Tories that are in there are the ones that left the Tory party and didn't get re-elected. Like Dominic Greaves in there, David Gawke.
No one would confuse
Tommy
you.
Tommy Robinson's in there.
No one could confuse you with a right-winger. No,
of course not.
You're neutral.
I am, of course.
You
said so. In all things, it says it on the tin. But I put Tommy Robinson in, and a few people were like, that's not fair. He's a patriot.
Poor old Tommy.
Poor old Tommy. Why are you picking on him? I'm like, he's one out of 100 people, you know. But it's people, you know, Prince Harry's in there, you know, Meghan Markle, Steve Coogan, Hugh Grant, my favourite. Hugh Grant, every single bloody candidate that he's supported and campaigned for lost. He's like a kiss of death, right? Yeah. But seriously, I mean, when you see Putney is the one place where they've gained a seat, a place where, one of the richest parts of London, where I think every house, minimum, is £1 million.
Yeah.
You know, in any road you choose to pick, probably more in Putney. And they lose the mining communities of the North East. I mean, they can't fix
totally
this.
Upside down.
They can't fix this in a month of Sundays, or I don't think in the next 5-year electoral period. I just don't think they can.
So we might well be in for another 2-3 terms of the Tories.
Well, I think the Tories will surprise you, right? And I'm not going to be singing from the battlements or anything like that, because I'm now going to pick on the Tories because they're the government, which is what I should do, right? Because they have said that they're going to reinvigorate the North, that which they're going to have to be held to account to do.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to do something in order to keep those people who voted for them anyway. They've said they're going to do something about the borders. They've said they're going to do something about the NHS. But they've got a great opportunity to now do things which need to be done in this country, you know?
Well, I think, and I think I might have said it on this programme, but on this podcast, but if not, I'll say it now. I think a lot of Remainers' fears about Boris Johnson, and I'll include myself in this, was a suspicion that actually there's a chance that he might turn out to be a very good Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Because he is so kind of wild and upfront and energetic.
And he's not actually a particularly conservative.
No, he's not. He's much more Michael Heseltine than Margaret Thatcher, for instance.
Yeah.
And nevertheless, you know, just for the record, I still think it's terrible that a guy who says the things he says and is so blasé with the truth is now our Prime Minister. That said, I am not going to make the mistake that I think we did with the Iraq War when we were at the Mirror together, when Piers campaigned really hard against going to war under Tony Blair, and we were brutal, weren't we? You know, you remember the coverage against Tony Blair.
Yeah.
People think that the Mirror was a slavishly Labour paper. Go back and have a look at those front pages. They were brutal. Mm. But we carried on after we went in. And that's when we got a massive hit. Because the British public will accept, I think, a lot of debate. But once you kind of start looking like you're a defeatist or you're betraying the national cause,
or you're somehow misusing the troops in some way, shape or form.
So the minute, then it was all about back our boys. You know, we didn't, and we paid a big price.
Yes.
Now I think that Brexit's inevitable.
Actually, the whole paper's lurched to the kind of what I would call the far left in a way, because it was a kind of far left inspired. Yeah. They hired John Pilger.
That's right.
You know, they got these guys who were very anti Tony Blair's project
Jonathan
was all about.
Jonathan Freeland, Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah, to write stuff that was very far over which was almost pacifist
I remember a very striking, I mean, I didn't want to make this about the Iraq War, but there was a very striking front page, which I remember because it was my idea,
okay.
which was there was a picture of some people, Iraqis in Baghdad. It was a sunny Sunday afternoon. And they were just sitting there eating ice cream cones, a family. I think we ran it under the headline, The Enemy. You know, and it was just, it sort of just brought home the fact that these were just ordinary people who were about to get on the receiving end. But the point I wanted to make was, Brexit now is inevitable. It is going to happen. What Brexit comes
to... Do you feel a sense of relief now? I've spoken to people who say they do. Remainers, by the way.
Yeah.
Who say, actually, I woke up at some point over the weekend and realised that a kind of weight had been lifted off my shoulders. It's now going to happen.
Because it's out of our hands.
Yeah, it's now out of your hands.
I do sort of feel that to a degree. I mean, I've spent enough of my life now arguing against Brexit. I've done whatever I can. Launched a bloody newspaper. You know, I've done my bit, and I've lost that argument.
Now, interesting to ask you this question, because what will you now do with the new European? Because does it now become what I think you said to here before, a kind of campaigning newspaper to get back in, if you like?
Yeah, well, I think what it'll do,
because it's going to be quite soon to do that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's too soon, and I think what we'll do is we will observe this process very closely.
Yeah.
But what
because they'll go on for a while.
Yeah, but I've spoken to the editor, Jasper, who's a brilliant, very, very smart guy. And Jasper said to me, he said, look, the word Remain is now a problem because there is no Remain.
Right.
Right? Remain is over.
Right.
So we've got to stop being the paper of Remain. Right. That's a lost cause. But we can...
That's why you didn't call it the Remainer then, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, the new Remainer. But we can certainly be a paper... I never want to get into the territory of saying, I told you so. Look how shit this is. I told you so.
Right.
Oh, what did you expect, Lee?
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
No.
Because nobody wants that. Because one of the things that I get... I mean, you will hate this story, right? On Friday, the day after the election result came out... Well, the day the election result came out, I guess, we did... The overnight show. I finished at 6:30. I went for an hour's sleep, went and did the mid-morning show in the tent down on College Green, which is like bloody a quagmire. Yeah. I tell you what, Jesus Christ. But everybody was there. As I was walking back, and I was a bit spaced out by this time, a guy comes up to me in the tube station, right? A bit like that guy that you saw doing it to me, but he was a tube worker, and he came up and he grabbed my hand and then grabbed my arm, one of those kind of two-handed things.
Yeah.
And do you know what he said to me?
Go on.
He said, thank you for everything you've done for us.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they see me as this kind of positive... guy, because people were losing the plot. They were losing faith. They were saying, it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
These people are never going to let us leave Europe.
Yeah.
And I said, no, it'll be fine. You know, the evil genius Dominic Cummings has got a plan. Don't worry, he's still going to, you know, he knows we're going to have an election. Anyway, I think the positivity is what people like. They don't want this relentless negative kind of, it's all going to be shit, it's all going to be crap. And you won't win any friends that way.
And also, I mean, what I think may become clear is that an awful lot of people like myself who've been characterised as treacherous and, you know, and spoilers of democracy and all of this. I think people, I hope, will see in our behaviour now that this is happening.
Yeah.
The truth, which is that while it was still up for debate, we debated it as hard as we could.
Yeah.
Now it's moved into a new phase.
But unfortunately, not everybody is going to be as mature as you, because I had a guy called Jonathan Liss in the tent that day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if you know.
I do.
And very kind of condescending tone. And I don't know the guy, so I'm not going to slag him off. But he was saying things like, well, you know, we'll see now whether or not they were right, that it was not going to be a disaster. You know, I still think that it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
And then... He said, I said, yeah, but you've got to stop regretting things, you know? And he actually said, well, we might have things to regret in the future. And I said, well, you can't regret the future, it hasn't happened yet. You know, so people are ready to be regretful about something that hasn't happened.
Yeah,
and
people
like him are willing to think that things are going to be bad rather than willing to think that things are going to be good. And I'm not saying that I'm going to be right, I might be wrong. But it's much better, isn't it, to go, yeah, let's try and make this work.
Life's too short, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
You know, I suspect there are a lot of people out there who want it to be a disaster so that they can say, I told you so.
Yeah, but hopefully they're fewer in number than they were.
But also, I really don't think... I think they are nutcases on the end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
I think... And it may surprise people. You know, I think people like Alistair Campbell, even Tony Blair, you know, John Major, I think all of these people now
They're all on the planks list, by the way, all three.
Oh, they are. Yeah. Well, I think maybe not for next year, then maybe you might revise it. But I think they'll all be praying that Brexit is a massive success because I don't think any of them are anything less than massively patriotic.
Yeah.
And I would argue, this is my argument, take it however you like, people like them and people like myself, I think you can make a good case for saying we're more patriotic, because it wasn't an easy thing to say. You know, we all stuck our necks on the line. Mm. We stood up to have stuff thrown at us.
Yeah.
Because we believed that this was an important thing and there was a chance to
and
have
you
a
genuinely thought that it was the wrong choice.
Yeah, totally.
And I totally respect that, you know. I mean, what I don't respect are people in Parliament who, many of them are now no longer there because they lost their seats,
yeah.
But who pretended that they were working for the common good, but in fact were only working to stop it from happening.
Yeah.
And they weren't being honest about that. Yeah. And I would much rather they had been. I mean, to be fair to Jo Swinson, at least, even though she kind of ruined herself by doing it, at least we knew that she didn't. She was absolutely out there with her view that we shouldn't be doing it, and that she would do everything she could to stop it.
I mean, the person I admire, and, you know, not having gone through all 650 of them to rank them in order, but the one that stands out to me as having been now, you know, ostracised for it, but being totally principled, is Dominic Grieve, you know, who I think...
I can't see principled and Dominic Grieve in the same sentence,
really?
I'm afraid. No.
Really?
No.
Why? Because do you think that he was cynical or... What, I mean...
No, I just think he was arrogant. I think he didn't fancy leaving Europe, right? I don't know why. He didn't really give his reasons. I never heard his reasons. All I heard him saying was that he didn't want it to happen.
Yeah.
He never really said why he wanted to stay in the European Union or what was so great about it. All he said was what was so bad about leaving it.
Yeah.
You know, and he voted against his own party. He should have declared himself an independent, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
He should have said, all right, I'm not going to stand on the manifesto of getting Brexit done because that's what the people voted for. Because that's what he did in 2017, right? He's still on that platform. And he said that he would get Brexit sorted out when they were re-elected. He didn't do it. He went the other way. So that's not honourable to me.
All right. Well,
he should have either crossed over to the Lib Dems or he should have become an independent. He should have left the Tory party before they kicked him out.
Well, I think that he thought, I've been a Tory all my life and I'm going to fight for the Tory party as I see it, as much as anything else. Anyway,
the thing is
over now.
But then the thing is, you fall into that trap of saying, oh, well, the Tory party's lurched to the right, so it's not my party anymore. Well, it hasn't lurched to the right, actually. What it's doing is working through the referendum result, which clearly was a massive bombshell to everybody, but which was not party political, but which has to be done.
And I think that the far right, I think the ERG, and who, you know, are all pretty quiet right now, I think they will be massively disappointed with what Boris Johnson comes up with.
Well, they seem to be happy enough. I mean, I've spoken
to them. They were the last chance saloon, aren't they? They saw it all slipping away and they're still sort of grabbed hold of the fact
that... Well, I think a bit like Nigel Farage, they've had to look at what's going on and they've had to be... sort of rational about it. They've had to be pragmatic and they've had to say to themselves, well, we can either do this and start the process of Brexit or we can stop it again and we'll be nowhere. Nigel Farage, when he was interviewed the other night, on election night, I think it was, when I watched before I went into work, he said, well, Andrew Neil said to him, well, you know, how can you support something that you said you didn't support? He said, well, because this is the only Brexit we can get.
Yeah. So
Nigel Farage is saying that, then what's Mark Francois going to say?
So, but we are agreeing in a way. I mean, I think that is the reality, is that Mark Francois, right, who, like, Boris won't let us down, Boris won't betray us, the union will stay in touch, Northern Ireland, blah, blah, blah. He's getting none of that.
No.
But he'll still have to swallow it and suck it up because that's
because
it. Same way I'm sucking it.
Yeah, because Boris Johnson has had to find a way through the craziness, right? Because we were literally going mad.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems you know, we've forgotten how frustrating it was.
I think a lot of people seriously underestimated Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
I do. And
totally.
I think his, whatever you think of the man, I think the way he played the politics in the first few months of his prime ministership were faultless.
Well, because what he did was he created very much without having to look as if he was doing anything at all.
Yeah.
This image of all these people trying to stop Brexit getting done, and he succeeded.
And you've just hit, by the way, the key point, which symbolises everything to me, is everyone can remember "Get Brexit Done."
Yeah.
What was the Labour Party slogan?
They didn't have one.
They did. They had something like creating a better, fairer world for blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
No one can remember it.
No.
You know?
Because it wasn't snappy. It wasn't smart. It seems to me they didn't have very many clever people running their campaign.
Well, I think that is, they had a massive, conspicuous shortage of brain power.
Yeah.
And the slogan that people can remember about Corbyn, the "for the many, not the few," that has always been like really flawed to me.
Because
I think unless you're on either extreme of that spectrum, either, you know, you're a billionaire or you're on universal credit, You don't know whether you're one of the many.
No, because I don't feel like I'm one of the many, no. along with the fucking dog bludgers.
You would have been, wouldn't you?
Well, apparently. Well, I don't know, because I said that to John McDonald, you know, why are you giving me free broadband? I can afford it.
Yeah.
I'm one of the few, aren't I?
Yeah.
You're giving me free broadband.
But he'd have been taking it out of your pay packet, wouldn't he?
Yeah, exactly. That's universal bloody, you know, benefit to everybody, right? What are you doing that for? The other problem with the many, not the few, is that it can easily be changed into the many, not the Jew. Which, of course, a lot of people did, rightly or wrongly, and it just makes them look ridiculous. Also, this whole class war thing is bullshit, because, as we've seen, the class war is not being fought by the working class Labour voters. Yeah. Yeah. It's all these middle-class tosspots who've been to university. Did you see that girl on Twitter?
Who?
When they're doing the Boris, the anti-Boris demos, laughingly, you know, he's not our Prime Minister. Well, he is, actually.
Yeah.
You know?
Unfortunately, whether you like it or not.
You had your chance to vote yesterday. Yeah. And now the fact you don't like the guy, you're going to demonstrate, fight with the police, you fucking man. Anyway, this very posh girl has walked like this, wouldn't you? Yeah. I want to work in the NHS and Boris Johnson is going to destroy it. You know, and it's like, mummy and daddy have told me I can be a doctor because they've got lots of money.
Yeah.
And then she's going, fuck Boris.
Yeah.
And she called him the C word. Really? You know, I mean, on camera. I'm thinking, if I was your dad, I'd be absolutely appalled.
Yeah.
I want to help people. I don't want to hurt them. He just doesn't care. He's killing people. And you're like, what is wrong with you? You're fucking deranged.
They are deranged.
They're totally deranged.
But
they're being wound up by these trots, you know, the anti-corporate globalist types who wear the black balaclavas,
what,
right?
Who love a punch up. Rebellion people.
Well, no, those the globalised people. They're the ones that used to go to Seattle.
Yeah.
They used to be all over the world. They seem to have disappeared.
Well, the ones that I think are more dangerous than that, because at least they stick badges on themselves and mark themselves out so you can see what they are.
Yeah.
But the ones who are truly dangerous, I think, are the Owen Joneses, the Ash Sarkers, the Aaron Stoneys in this world, who, if you're lucky enough not to know any of those names, count yourself blessed.
They're all on the list as well, by the way.
They should be in the top 10, mate. Honestly, I mean, the absolute arrogance of these people.
Grace Blakely's the other.
Great, and they're all making, by the way, fantastic livings out of their brands of socialism. Mm. All of them. Owen Jones in particular, you know, never has there been a guy who's made more out of Corbynism than Owen Jones.
It's shocking.
And yet he is still there being paraded as the voice of the left and all of this.
But they still give him, put it to me that this, I think it was the morning after the election, ITV had Ash Sarkar on TV.
Yeah.
I don't put her anywhere near my show. Yeah. I won't have anybody on from the
bar. Had the two, and she, well, there was a great podcast I was shown.
Well, better than this one. Surely
no. It was like a Navarra media, you know, organisation that they work for that gets no traffic.
They do put a podcast out. Yeah,
and she was there getting all misty eyed about the 1987 election, 1997 general election when Tony Blair was elected, and she was remembering.
Well, when she was about five.
Yeah, but she was remembering how her mum thought this was a game changer, you know, Labour coming in. And I thought, here's the woman who has done as much as anybody to alienate all the people who've made that victory possible.
Yeah.
Now crying about the fact that that victory has.
I'm amazed that she would have had anything good to say about Tony Blair, though. Because
no, it was just about
the enemy, as far
No, totally. But you know, once it was lost and it was over, maybe it occurred to them that it's better to be in power. Even if it's a slightly diluted form.
That was the great
eye-opener
that Tony Blair found, wasn't it? That he said, you know, I'm sick to death of not being in power.
That's right.
I'm sick to death of watching the Tories destroying the country and doing all the things to it that I don't want them to do.
Yeah.
So we better find a way of winning.
So that's what pisses me off about the Labour Party, is that they have, for maybe permanently, ruined that sense of pragmatism within the Labour Party that makes effective social change possible.
Yeah.
So if we do find ourselves now at the mercy of a Tory government for the next 15 years, and we rely on...
I don't think it will be that bad, because if you consider Tory party has become, and despite what the Corbynites say, it's a far more people-friendly and kind of all-inclusive party than it ever was. And if you look at some of the new MPs, 109 new MPs coming into Parliament. I'm always in favour of that.
Yeah.
Even if they might all be just a different brand of tosser.
Yeah.
They're new blood. Yeah. A lot of them are quite young. Quite a lot of women.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of ethnic diversity, which is always good. And, you know, get rid of some of the people like Dominic Green, who have been there too bloody long anyway, and bring in some fresh blood. And, maybe, and you know, you're not going to tell me that... I mean, we've all had to... you know, notice the change in society. We all speak differently. We're all much more kind of aware of people than we used to be.
Yeah.
You know, the tax regimes are very much more centrist, Labour, now than they were ever kind of, you know, when Margaret Thatcher was around.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to be handing out, you know, tax breaks to the rich. You know, they won't do that. They've increased benefits. I mean, all of those things that the Labour Party says they haven't done, I think they'll do more of.
If they wanted to do something that I think would be really smart, it was the one policy that Corbyn came up with that everybody thought that's a good idea. Nationalise the bloody railways again.
Yeah.
You know, really, honestly, Boris Johnson, go out, nationalise the railways.
But do it with a decent team of management.
Exactly.
People and actually make it more efficient.
You know, but he is going to have to live up to a lot of promises. Yeah. Especially in the north of
America. Also, because he can, he should do it.
Yeah.
You know, totally. Because, I mean, we were talking, funnily enough, about later this week, there's likely to be state opening of Parliament, another Queen's speech, another position, and we're not even sure if we're going to cover it this time, in the sense of being there.
Yeah.
Because I tell you last time, they take all the traffic lights out and everything. It's really quite weird. Yeah, you know, everything around the Palace of Westminster, including the big security,
all the crash walls, barrier things,
that all gets taken away because her carriage has to come there.
Right.
But they also take all the traffic lights out and the lamp posts, presumably because they're worried that somebody's planted a bomb there.
Amazing.
But it's quite an incredible thing to see. Then they basically rope off the whole of
just
Parliament
so that
Square.
They don't stop on the red
signal. Yeah. Well, can you imagine? Well, I mean, they could just switch them off. No, I think it must be to do with worried in case somebody's been there at night or something. I don't know.
They could check all of that.
Well, you would think so.
Yeah.
All I could, or maybe it's something to do with the horses and they have to come through. I don't know.
Who knows?
Because maybe it's the fact that they're, you know, because, you know, there's so many traffic lights in London now. It's almost like sort of, you know, cluttering
up of
the
street.
No, it is. I mean, there's traffic lights everywhere. But
are you suggesting they should get rid of the traffic lights?
Well, it wouldn't make any difference, to be honest. I mean, I tried, you know, on Friday, Thursday night, right? I get picked up in a car because I was bringing loads of clothes and I brought a big coat because I thought if we're going down to, you know, I'm not coming home again.
Get the big coat.
So it was pouring with rain. And the whole of Jamaica Road, which I know is going to piss people off because it's very localised, but they're turning it, Sadiq Khan is turning it into a no-car zone, right? So they're digging the whole thing up. And I'm convinced that he's doing it at the moment just so people don't even use it anymore.
Right.
And it's only going to be open for buses, bikes and taxis.
Right.
Black cab. So I said to the guy whose car I was in, I said, well, you won't be able to drive here because it was ordered by the company. He said, what do you mean? I said, as of about the end of January, no more private cars or private hire cars.
Yes.
Are going to be allowed to use this road. It's all the way from Tower Bridge to Greenwich.
Incredible.
And it's the only way to go.
Incredible.
So what are we supposed to do?
No, I'd stay at
home. So we're sitting there, and I'm supposed to get in at 20 past 11. Rupert Murdoch was in the building. He was in the office.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to get there in time to see him. And by the time I got there, he'd gone.
Oh, you know. He must have been devastated.
He was really devastated.
Did he leave a little note on your desk? No, he didn't, sadly. I had to fly.
Sorry.
Got to see you next time, Rupe.
Yeah. No, unfortunately not. I've only ever met him once, and I didn't really meet him then. And that was when I was in the Sun.
Yeah.
At that same time when I was working, I was about 22, 23 in Belvoir Street. And they used to have this great sign that said, you're now entering Sun Country. And these double doors. And he just came bursting through these double doors. And I kind of looked up and went, oh Christ, it's really good. You know, and he's quite young then.
I met him once, right, with Richard Wallace, the editor of the Mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Richard went to Abu Dhabi, right, for this Abu Dhabi Media Summit.
Oh yeah.
And we stayed at the Yas Marina,
which was nice.
It was absolutely amazing. I'll never forget Wallace texting me. We both went into this hotel suite. We had rooms like on the same floor. And we went in, and it's the hotel that kind of encompasses the Formula One track.
Oh, yes.
So the track runs.
Oh, yeah, my daughter was there.
It's amazing for the
Formula One.
And I've just got this text from Wallace saying, bloody hell, they've given me Jay-Z's suite. But it was like that. Anyway, so Murdoch was there as well.
Right.
He gave this weird speech about the sands of time will come over Arabia and free press, blah, blah, blah. And he looked really ill giving the speech.
Right.
And at one moment, he lost his place in the paper, right, and struggled to find where he was in his speech notes. And people were going, he's having a heart attack. People were reaching for their phones to video the death of Rupert Murdoch. Anyway, he got through it. He had a terrible stinking flu, apparently. That night, they had a sort of party on this rooftop terrace. And I'm sitting there. Wallace has just gone to the toilet. And I'm sitting on my own, on this bit of decking, having a drink.
Yeah.
And I turn to my left. Who do I see walking towards me on his own in this crowded room? Rupert Murdoch.
Right.
So I think, the hell with it. I go up and say hello to him because I've never met him. So
right.
I stand up. And as I stand up, Murdoch, there was a sort of 4-inch deck that you had to step up to.
Okay.
Murdoch trips. He didn't see it. Trips
on it. You don't tell me you caught
it. Falls into my arms.
No.
Right. I catch Rupert Murdoch, right? put him back on his feet. Right. And I say, Rupert Murdoch, Matt Kelly from the Daily Mirror. Like, good to meet you.
Right.
And then just walked off past him. But yeah, I saved his life.
That's fantastic.
Never thank me, the bastard.
Well, I mean, there's still time, you know. Maybe, maybe you'll end up working for him. And you can say, do you remember the time I saved your life?
Yes, that's right.
And he might say, yeah, I do.
That's right. I'd quite like to be editor of the Times Literary Supplement.
Oh, would you?
Yeah.
I'm not sure there's a vacancy for that.
There may be one day, though.
There may be.
Yeah.
It's quite a slick little publication, actually.
I love it, yeah. I really like it.
It's very good.
It's nearly as good as the London Review of Books.
I would
make it that good.
Who does that?
That's
London Review of Books.
Well, that's
a private, independent.
Yeah, it's independent.
One of those little publications.
Oh, yeah, no, it's got about 90,000
No, I don't mean little in that sense, but it's a small, it's all they do. It's not part of a bigger house.
No, that's all they do, but it's a fantastic, fantastic
publication. I mean, speaking of the media kind of landscape, when you look at the way that that Reach has taken over now the Express and the Star, and it still runs the Mirror. I mean, I'm still puzzled about all of that, really. I can't, I mean, you know, I can't see really how it all works, how it all gets put together, because I'm still kind of...
What, the commercials, you mean?
Well, just everything. I mean, I'm looking at the papers just going, they must be making money. I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
But it's
they
just,
do make a lot of money.
It's not very good, you know?
Yeah. Well, I remember...
I think I could say, hand on heart, I don't really read any of the papers they put out.
Well, I definitely think that, I mean, a lot of our good friends still work there, so I'll say what I'm saying.
I'm not attacking them.
Yeah.
I'm really not.
It's a different model from when it was when we were there. I mean, I remember being head of features at the Mirror and never knowing what my budget was.
Right.
You know, never had to ask anybody.
Right.
Just, you know, whatever it was, spend it, get it done. Now I think they know to the penny. And I had about 20 feature writers.
Well, I wrote a piece for the Express about the Women's World Cup that they asked me to do, which was described by somebody as very progressive, you'll be pleased to know. And it was basically pro the Women's World Cup, so great stuff it was. They ran it as a spread.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you how much they paid me, but I'm glad I'm not doing it for a living, is all I would say.
Buttons,
I mean,
that's
sort of extra money on the side to pay for a dinner or something.
Being a freelancer is a hard game.
It's really hard, because even people who work for some of the bigger organisations that pay a bit more money are saying to me things like, well, when they used to pay a grand for, they're paying like 300 quid.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure that's
you know,
true.
That's where it's going.
Yeah. I mean, on the New European, when we paid freelancers, the last time I paid freelancers was when I was head of features at the Mirror. So I suspect we are paying towards the higher end of the freelance rate for a smallish publication like that, which maybe goes partly the way to explain why we've got such good writers and such loyalty.
Of course.
Know? But we're not...
Or they're all independently wealthy.
No, they're not all independently wealthy.
Well, we shall see. We'll talk some more about all of that, because I think we've come to the end of another...
That's flown by.
Podcast. It has, isn't it? But we'll see you on Thursday for the last one...
Last one of the year?
I guess it is the last one of the year, isn't it?
What's a year it's been?
No, actually, it's not the last one of the year, because we'll be back... We're not going to be around next week, but we'll be back on the 30th.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
Aren't you?
No, because I think I might still be away.
In
Lanzarote.
Oh, right.
It might be the last one of the year.
It might well be.
Well, let's work it out. We'll
work it out.
Well,
in time for Thursday.
Yes.
In time for Thursday, we'll do it.
We'll do it.
We're the Thought Police.
Bye. This is pure thickness to me. And by the way, this is what riles me about the Labour Party more than anything. Corbyn's Labour Party. It's not the anti-Semitism stuff, disgusting as that is.
Yeah.
It's not the prevarication over and the vacillation on Brexit, stupid as that was. Mm. But it was their sheer organisational incompetence. Mm. You know, they were just a crap organisation.
Yeah.
And they let things completely take them over. They let the agenda get swept away from them.
Yeah.
And they spent 2 years defending themselves from anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
When a smart person...
And yet doing nothing about
and
it.
And doing nothing about it. But a smart person would have come out and said, when Andrew Neil said, are you going to apologise?
Yeah.
He would have said, not only am I going to apologise on behalf of the Labour Party, I'm going to apologise on behalf of myself.
Yes.
Because I've looked back and I can see why people think that what they think.
Yeah.
But it's not me and blah, 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 blah,
yeah.
blah. And if he'd have looked the camera in straight down the barrel of the camera and said something that smacked of sincerity, I think a lot of people would have gone, okay, fair enough. I turn to my left, who do I see walking towards me on his own in this crowded room, Rupert Murdoch.
Right,
so I think, the hell with it, I go over and say hello to him,
yeah.
I've never met him. So I stand up, and as I stand up, Murdoch, there was a sort of 4-inch deck that you had to step up to.
Okay.
Murdoch trips, he didn't see it, trips
on don't tell me you caught
falls into my arms.
No.
Right, I catch Rupert Murdoch, right? put him back on his feet and say, Rupert Murdoch, Matt Kelly from the Daily Mail, good to meet you. And then just walked off past him. But yeah, I saved his life.
That's fantastic.
No one could confuse you with a right winger.
Of course not.
You're neutral.
I am, of course. You'd say so. In all things, you'd say so on the tin.